Hello world, and welcome back to the PocketGamer.biz podcast. I'm your host this week, Craig Chappell, head of content at PocketGamer.biz. And this week I've got with me PocketGamer.biz editor Daniel Griffiths and news editor Aaron Assel. No Brian this week or Paige, so we're a few members down, and once again, worryingly, I've been given hosting duties. So we'll see how that goes over the next hour or so.
It's going to be dynamite. It's a hell of a week. Hell of a week for news.
It has been crazy this week. We've got Embracer, Squadbusters, TikTok. We've kind of got it all. So, but before we get to all that, what's everyone been up to? Daniel, what's going on?
I feel like it's been a very Swedish, Finnish, Nordic, King and Supercell kind of week. Aaron's been away in Stockholm at the King HQ, having a look around and doing lots of interviews from there. So I'm sure he'll fill us in with about that a bit later on. And then the Squadbusters news from Supercell has been kind of looming and has dropped these last couple of days. So there's plenty to talk about there. I think, Craig, you've got lots of stuff looking after that. So, yeah, that's been the main focus for the last couple of days. That and the fact that we have our next event, the Dubai Game Expo Summit powered by PG Connects, returns to Dubai on May the 1st and 2nd. So there's been lots of Dubai and MENA article news. We got things, great stuff. Tamtam Games CEO Hussam Hamo is on the site. Kuali Saeed Rahman is on the site. So yeah, we've been pulling together lots and lots of MENA region articles to in preparation for our event and the end of our MENA month on PG.biz. So yes, that's been the main focus this week. Plus, I can't help watching Apple and Nintendo's Delta Blues as they struggle their way through. Are emulators legal or not? Let's pretend that they are for now. But I'll talk about that a little bit later on. And of course,
it all sounds good now, though.
Yeah, it's
for now.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Everyone is very happy. I'm certain, but we shall explain later. And needless to say, as a certified Apple fanboy, I can't take my eyes off what's happening with Apple Vision Pro. So yeah, I'll talk about that in a bit anyway. But yeah, that's been my week mainly.
And yeah, Aaron, so you've been away in lovely Sweden. Has it been snowing there?
Yes. it wasn't while I was there, but I think it was just before and just after.
You arrived just in time.
But that might not be the worst thing. Yeah, where flight-wise, I'm sure that wouldn't have been great. But yeah, so that was interesting. My first time in Sweden. Didn't get to see a lot of the sights because it was all very King oriented, which was great. So we had a look around a few floors in the headquarters. Got to see a lot of all the areas are very themed after their games, so there were a lot of Candy Crush figures for different characters and a little bit from Farm Hero Saga. I got to have a go at making the Candy Crush level as well.
What?
A fun time. Yeah.
You were like, no more match three.
Yeah, we're getting rid of that part.
We're going match one.
But yes, that was a fun time. So one of their interns sort of showed me how it all works, and I was blown away by how intuitive it is. I was expecting it to be all like code and you have to type stuff in and then you'll see it show up. But it's literally like if you want to put an ice obstacle in, you like click on the little ice icon and then click on the board where you want it to go or like for whatever else. So that was really interesting. But I guess all the work is in designing interesting levels rather than being able to program those levels. Which was quite fascinating to find out. And then they've got like an AI bot now that playtests the levels like thousands of times to judge how difficult they are. and all the ones that I made were like the easiest that it could possibly solve, apparently.
Right, just plowed through yours.
Which, yeah, basically, which goes to show, I guess, there is some technique to being a good level designer. Yeah, other than that, I sort of interviewed quite a few of the sort of key team at King across different games, like Candy Crush and Soda and Farm Heroes Saga and the President, but I'll get into those a bit more later. Other than that, I cracked out the old 3DS to take on the trip for something to do on the plane, which was a fun time. I didn't take too much stuff, so I didn't take the Switch. So yeah, I got the 3DS out.
So you didn't play Candy Crush on your trip to...
I didn't want to overdo it, you know. Wanted to feel fresh on the day.
Lots of great interviews that have been up on the site. So anyone listening to this, bunch of interviews. We'll go into it in a bit, but definitely worth a read, and I think more to come. So for myself, I have not really been up to that much, but I did take the time to watch the Fallout TV series that we discussed last week. And I watched it in about 2 days, and I can confirm that it is fantastic. It's kind of just it's just a good TV show in its own right, firstly.
Right.
And also, it's kind of what I think, as a fan of the games, it's kind of what I want from a TV show about those games. It has, like, it really nails the kind of the humour, and it has serious moments, and the world is just perfect. I already can't wait for season two, and annoyingly, knowing streaming services probably won't see it for like 2 years. But otherwise, I feel like I've just been deep into Squad Busters and Embracer stories this week, and we definitely got a lot to say on this podcast about those. So yeah, well, nice leads on to our news run through for the week. So clearly, the first thing we have to talk about, not Embracer. That's coming. Supercell's Squad Busters, it went into soft launch on Tuesday, April 23rd. And then by Thursday, they've announced the global launch for May 29th. It's a 10-player squad building action game, which basically has players compete to capture the most gems. And I think rounds are like 4 minutes each. It marks Supercell's first launch in 5.5 years, and I was there for the Brawl Stars launch at that studio, so that was the last time, one of the last time I was at Pocket Gamer Biz.
That seems insane when you do the maths. Then they've just been resting on their laurels, doing nothing for 5.5 years.
It's only their sixth ever launch as well, right?
Incredible.
Formed in 2010, and so in 14 years, six games, but they've all made over $1 billion. So you could argue very much worth it. And obviously they've got loads of investments elsewhere. For example, like they've invested heavily in Metacore. Merge Manson's been hugely successful. But yeah, in regards to Squad Busters, so we had an interesting chat with Supercell CEO Ilkka Paananen, the Squad Busters Game League, Eino Joas, and marketing head Rob Lowe. They're all very clearly... they're all very excited about this game, obviously, and bringing it, making it to a global launch. Interestingly, Ilkka kind of opened up at the start and said he had mixed feelings about not launching a game for so long. So I guess, you know, they've all been kind of wanting it to happen. But he's ultimately proud that they kind of stuck to their guns and kept that, I guess, that quality bar that they try and hit, which is effectively $1 billion or bust. It's amazing how open they are about that in terms of making $1 billion, because in the press release, which is for consumers, it basically says it's going to make $1 billion. Like, they're confident. So I'm just surprised they actually say that bit. So when I did ask them, was there any pressure to rely on Supercell's IP to launch a successful game? So Squad Busters is a mashup of all of its IP. And especially given kind of the current, you know, state of the market, that a title like Monopoly Go does really well, and there's the feeling that you need these big licenses or big brands to get to, I guess, get to the top of the charts and be successful. There are obviously successes that haven't had that, but that seems to be one of the feelings. Ado actually gave a pretty passionate answer, and he said that the truth was actually the opposite. And he said that this was actually a love letter to Supercell IP. And whether you believe that or not, but the genesis of the game, I guess that kind of makes sense, because they actually started making it years ago, and it had the codename Fun.
Yeah.
And they wanted to release it 10 years as like their 10-year anniversary game. Obviously, that never happened. So that would have been about 2020. And we haven't had a launch since 2018. Ilka said that, ironically, the game wasn't actually fun. But they eventually turned it into something else, and what basically Squadbusters is now. One last tidbit I just wanted to give that I thought was interesting was that they basically said that, yeah, it's an IP mashup, and maybe in future they'll open that up to external IP partnerships. So I guess, you know, the kind of thing that we've seen with Fortnite and Stumble Guys.
They'll
bring all that IP in. So, you know, maybe we'll see Marvel in Squadbusters, or
I wouldn't be surprised. Whatever. Yeah, no, if they're ever doing that, I mean, it's a platform that would easily work. I could see you could drop any kind of character in there, in various forms, and level it up. Yeah, it's I think they've definitely got an eye on what Stumble Guys have been doing. So yeah, that's a road ahead for the game, I'm sure.
Yeah, just a very big moment for them. They need a big success. I think just. This might be a bit much to say, but just for their kind of reputation, you know, they used to be kind of maybe the biggest and best mobile developer around. And recent years, just for the nature, they've not launched anything, and their games have generally been in decline, except for obviously Brawl Stars recently. That they need a new game to kind of get themselves back on top, and also maybe prove that the restructuring is working. Maybe for next week's podcast, but I'm looking into the data on all of their existing games to see how that restructure has had any effect on their current live games as well. Mm. Yeah, it's all kicking off at Supercell at the moment. Mm. Elsewhere in the news, so just quickly, so Sanlo has launched a new webshop platform in closed beta. It's basically formed by ex-Playfish staff, which I've noticed seem to be in leadership positions everywhere now.
Right.
I'm struggling to think of examples on my head, but obviously, you know, Christian Sigastrala, the Super Evil Bear Core, he was running Playfish, I think, at the time. And yeah, just the alumni there just been super successful ever since. Basalo is basically a platform that offers financial monetization services to track revenue and payments. It's raised $13.5 million to date from investors including London Venture Partners and Convoy Ventures. Mm. And it's now entered, as I said, the webshop space, helping developers build their own stores outside of the apps or Google Play while also powering those payments. So it's basically a continuation of the trend into webshops for the big mobile publishers. For example, Playtika is proving how lucrative that could be. And I had a look, and in its 2023 financials, it said that 25% of its revenue was coming from its direct-to-consumer platform.
Right.
So there's a lot of interest in this stuff. Obviously, you don't have to pay the 30% share. You could pay as little as like 5%. Mm. And then the other big story of the week, I feel like I'm getting to do all the stories I really wanted to do. TikTok. What's the headline? TikTok gets it in the face from the US and UK. Cool.
Poor old TikTok. Everyone hates TikTok. They can't catch a break. And it's all happened this week. Yeah, amazing.
So the news is that for some reason the divest or ban bill was back in the House of Representatives. So we reported on it previously, but anyway, it was back and it got passed by the House of Representatives. And then it went to the Senate as part of a foreign aid package deal. So that included aid for Ukraine, which I think was like $61 billion. So it kind of was very, very likely to get passed because of that. And then now it's been signed by President Biden. And basically the legislation gives ByteDance 9 months with a possible 3 month extension to sell TikTok or be blocked in the US. So TikTok is obviously furious and is about to fight the ban. I've read that appeals that could end up in the Supreme Court could mean we won't actually see a ban for like 2 years. And also, if Donald Trump becomes president, I haven't read this anyway, I'm just wondering, even though he was the one that kicked all this off, might he's now changed his mind. So I'm wondering, can he reverse it if he gets into power and say, no, we're not banning TikTok anymore? I don't know. It seems likely to me, but maybe because it's already all been signed, it's too late.
It's a tricky one. It's a bit of a tightrope for him to tread, because needless to say, he'd love to take the opposite side of any argument to President Biden. But whether he wants to fully embrace the TikTok loving masses, that sounds like a good move. But ultimately, at its heart, this legislation is to stop nefarious Chinese invasion of American citizens' privacy. I wonder which side of the fence a new President Trump would come down on, really. Yeah, he could make the TikTok fans very happy, but at the price of American civil liberty. I one thing's for certain, you can't predict what Donald Trump's going to do, really. So we'd best not bother. But if he gets in, it's going to be. It's all going to get undone. So, and as you say, it's going to be 2 years before this could be fully enacted and enforced anyway. So, it's a messy business. But the thing I just feel sorry for all the teenagers in tears holding placards, you know, that we've seen on the news. So, I just want them to be happy. I want them to have their TikTok in whatever form. if someone's going to buy it, that would save the day for them.
Thing is, also in the news this week, we had that I guess tit for tat isn't very good way to look at things. But, you know, China has, I think, forced Apple to remove WhatsApp and, I can't remember now, Instagram off of the China App Store. So, you know, if China gets angry about this, it's like, well, but you kind of block these things on your end. When it happens in the US, there's like, well, what are you doing? You can't do this over potentially serious privacy and national security concerns, whether you believe that or not.
But, yeah, because TikTok was saying that, it goes against like freedom of speech and they should be allowed to stay without any Americans companies being involved, basically. But it's like the whole getting a license to release a game in China, like you need a Chinese publisher to work with. So it's just the inverse, really.
I don't know. It seems a bit hypocritical in some ways, but I guess that's not really how it works. But anyway.
Oh, and they've said they're not owned by China. But if they have to sell, they'd have to get Chinese permission before they're allowed.
Yeah.
Well, but I think we spoke about it on the podcast a few weeks ago, or a month ago or so. But it was like, what happens? The journalist, I think his details were kind of passed on to authorities in China. It's like, well, that kind of proves the concerns, right? And also potentially, what does TikTok do? It obviously has to defend itself, but it also then also proves politicians' points when it puts on to TikTok, call up your local representatives and tell them not to ban TikTok. Like that's how influential it is. So, I do believe the freedom of speech argument, but it also like, oh, that's how influential it is. If TikTok tells you to do something, you might do it.
Yeah, that was an amazing mistake, really. Thus proving the point of how much power this app has over our nation's teenagers. We told them to do this and they did it. It's like, kind of like, this is exactly why we need to ban this.
But But then, like, you know, that's it's also a reasonable thing for people to do. So it gets confusing. But the other part of this TikTok story very quickly was that in the EU, I think that they're testing a rewards program with TikTok Lite that gives you money for watching videos. And the EU is very unhappy about this because they're worried about, they have concerns about addiction. And so they're also threatening now to ban TikTok, or at least, actually, I'm not sure, at least TikTok Lite.
It's getting rid of that, the subscription thing, I think, or whatever you'd call it, yeah. You know, the monetized side.
It's a bad week.
It sounds too much like we're going to give you fraction. It is literally, we're going to pay you to sit and hoover about adverts. And yeah, it doesn't sound right. I mean, I'm not sure what law you can get them on, but yeah, fundamentally, it made me when I read about it for the first time, it kind of made me wince. You know, fractions of pennies to watch rubbish is come on. There's better things to do with your time, frankly.
Yeah, I think the EU introduced a new law recently, anyway, to do with like big companies have to release a risk assessment before they make any big updates. So I think that's where they're getting TikTok on this one, because they didn't do that in time.
Interesting. I think to relate it a little bit to games, you know, play to earn is a big thing. Well, a big thing. It's a thing. and so maybe it's different, but also if the EU is looking at this, maybe one day, why not? Maybe they'll have concerns about that. So anyway, that's it for my news roundup. But Daniel, you've got some hot news to talk about that you're definitely opinionated on as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be cherry picking my favourites from this week. The Delta emulator and the state of play. It's not going to go away. It's not going to go away anytime soon unless something really really drastic happens. The story this morning was that. It's been available for a week, and 4.4 million downloads have taken place. That's at least 4.4 million downloads, because that's purely just for the app itself, not the version of the app which is inside the Alt Store app. In case you've missed all this, basically the Delta emulator is a Nintendo games emulator that runs on iOS, and while it comes with no Nintendo games on board. It's very easy to find these Nintendo games. You know, far be it from me to tell you how to do it, but you can literally Google the name of a game and find it. But yeah, you can now, and then thanks to the Digital Markets Act opening up iOS in Europe, it's easier than ever to then sideload these games into the Delta app and play lovely versions of Nintendo classics for £0. It's amazing how we've got to this stage. You know, previously Apple have run a very tight ship. You know, everyone knows their iOS was hugely locked down, and then being forced to open up two alternative app stores via the Digital Markets Act in Europe. They did that, obeying the rules to the letter. Then in a bit of a panic, thinking that alternative app stores were then going to be swamped with emulators, they then allowed emulators in the front door as well, just so that they didn't all go into alternative app stores. And now we're in this idiotic position where, you know, the number one downloaded app is an app which basically, while not offering illegal software, basically allows you to play illegal software that you acquire. I can only wonder as to what the conversations between Apple and Nintendo are, but yeah, it's looking like Apple are basically obeying the letter of the law to the absolute letter, and basically saying, you wouldn't let us police our store, and now we're just going to walk away from it. So yeah, that's the state of play with that. 4.4 million people this week. Next week, I'll drop in how many folks are playing illegal Nintendo games. I can only think that it's going to get shut down somehow. The actual proper law must step in at some point and block this. But yeah, Apple are being blithely allowing openness on the on their store, and a giant such as Nintendo can't be happy about it. That's where that's at.
We spoke about it last week, so I won't like go too in detail. But as I said before, like it shouldn't be up to Apple to police the internet. And I think the fact that 4.4 million people have downloaded this maybe suggests that it's actually a good thing, that you can release new products that you wouldn't be able to release before. So this is one example. Maybe you say it's a bad one, but what else could be? I know this is specifically about emulation outside the EU, so it doesn't class for loads of other types of app. But, you know, what else could be released in future that was not allowed before when Apple was less open? And I think that's kind of quite exciting.
Oh yeah, I can't wait to see what's around the corner. I just feel for, you know, seeing these classics available for free. Of course, as a punter myself, I think it's a brilliant thing, but you know, just as you know, Napster giving away everyone's back catalogue for free back in the day, and the illegal downloading of movies of people who put blood, sweat, and tears and time into creating masterpieces only for them to be pissed away for free, shall we say? I have to sort of stand up and say, I value these things as art, and any kind of nefarious blundering giving away of it, I'm not on board. So yeah, I've as a conscientious objector, I've not downloaded the Delta emulator, nor shall I until I'm allowed to put money in it and make sure that it goes to the right person.
I love it.
But that's just me, one person versus 4.4 million. Yeah, who's right? Anyway.
But you're on a podcast, so you know, you can spread the message.
Yeah, yeah. Delete the Delta emulator. Do the right thing.
I need a start to this podcast. We've got like Aaron's against TikTok. You're against these emulators. Well, I need something.
We're all wearing a T-shirt with something written on the front, and so yeah, you need to pick a side. Get on it. Other stuff I've got that I found interesting. Call of Duty Warzone Mobile is making a load of cash. Hurrah. But not really that much. When you look at it compared to the previous Call of Duty, what's the numbers again? Let me get this in front of me. Yeah, 6.92 million in its first month, which is more than enough money for anyone. But success abroad in 44 million in the same month following its launch. I just wonder what's gone wrong. I just think it's great that you're making a new game. I just feel like it's a little too confusing. Perhaps the Call of Duty mobile fans are perfectly happy with what they've got. I think while Warzone Mobile is a great implementation of it, I'm not sure about the kind of the cross-play element. I just feel like maybe it's sort of holding all of it back. All the platforms back a bit, but I think mainly it's just
cross progression.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Yeah,
rather than cross play.
But I think it's just a bit of a confusing message, really. I think people are a little bit Call of Duty'd out, and they don't see the point of this new thing. So it's making money, but it's not the smash hit that it was. And I wonder what they can do to get folks on board, really. It's kind of as good as it can be, but it's not an attractive proposition for fans of the existing game and new folks. I think everyone's perfectly happy with the existing mobile title. Other stuff that I found very interesting was the FTC has banned non-compete clauses in tech contracts, which sounds really boring and sounds like the sort of thing that isn't particularly anything to do with us, apart from the majority of people that listen to this podcast, perhaps, and read pocketgamer.biz will have some kind of non-compete clause in their contract. A non-compete clause is the thing that prevents you from stealing all your company's secrets. This is all in theory, of course, and taking a better paid job with a rival and chopping and changing from company to company. So it's an interesting fact.
It doesn't stop you take sorry yeah a non-compete doesn't stop you taking company secrets on. That's a separate part of the contract. So non-compete is really just punitive action, really, against someone that wants to progress their career. Like, if you took a client, then you can't do that.
I think the assumption was that we have to have this non-compete to protect ourselves, but whereas ultimately it was making it harder for your talent to jump ship. It's an interesting story because the removal of this allows freedom, and that's a good thing. So I think that you'd be more justified in being able to seek a better paid job and move. So that's good.
The one thing I wanted to touch upon on this, that we kind of spoke about kind of as a team, was that I think sometimes people are like, well, a non-compete, is it enforceable?
Yeah.
And I think maybe a lot of times they're not, but that's not the point to me. So it's like, if you have a non-compete that lasts, I don't know, 6 months, a year, whatever, if you break that and then your employer says, no, you can't do that, it's then on to you to defend yourself. So you can either ignore it and hope it goes away. If it doesn't go away, I'm not a lawyer, as I always say, but I think you get penalized potentially for ignoring it. But to fight it, if you want proper legal representation, it could cost you thousands of pounds, thousands of dollars. You know, lawyers charge a few hundred pounds an hour, a good one, to defend this stuff. So you have to defend yourself against something that they might not even be able to enforce anyway. That's where part of the issue, I think, for people come in. You can't just simply ignore it necessarily. So I'm very happy to see that it's been banned, and that's one of the reasons I am happy to see it. To see it go.
Yeah, I think I mean, having worked as a journalist for quite some time, I've seen non-compete clauses in my contract, which basically, reading between the lines, says you're not allowed to leave this company and take a job as a journalist anywhere else. And when you highlight them and say, this is ridiculous, they say, the HR department had literally said to me, oh, don't worry about that. It's just one of those things, just ignore it. So whether that was true...
Don't worry about it until they get annoyed about it.
So whether that was true or not, I don't know. I still signed the contract. But yeah, I in that field, I've never seen anybody... I think everyone, these kind of contracts and these kind of lines within these contracts are sort of included on autopilot these days. They hope that it's going to scare you off from moving. So yeah, eliminating
them. But that's not always the case.
Yeah. Eliminating them is a good thing.
Sometimes they get very angry and we'll weep.
Yes, I've heard that happens. But the bigger picture that I worry about is it's going to allow people that, you know, that potentially could close the skills gap that a lot of folks have got, in that a whole new lineup of talent could make themselves appear and be ready for your company, being a long established one or a new startup. You know, they're speculating that there's going to be 8,500 new startups are going to spring up because of the sudden availability of talent once these clauses are removed. Yeah, it sounds good, but you know, at the same time as these people can now hire who they want, you know, their top staff will be looking to move somewhere else. So, yeah, and if wages go up, employees are happier. Everyone's going to get paid more, but ultimately there's less profits for the companies and the startups because their wages bill is going to go up. So, it'll be interesting to see how it resolves itself. Final thing from me, I know I mentioned it last week. We did create two part in a DMA breakdown webinar, which I've written a big report on the site, which is lots of great DMA advice and lots of confidence in the Digital Markets Act to right the ship and correct everything. So yeah, I would say do have a search for Digital Markets Act on the pocketgamer.biz and check out that article, which I think spells out what this all really means and where it could go and how it could really help your app. Once the random stuff has died down, but yeah, that's the pick of my bunch anyway for this week.
Yeah, that was a good webinar. I'd definitely read the article, but also Archie Stonehill at Stash. He was clearly a huge expert on this topic, and I actually learned quite a few things myself while on there. So yeah, definitely worth checking out. Right, so moving on to Aaron now. So obviously we teased it earlier, more than teased, but yeah, you've been in Sweden and you've been speaking with the people at King.
Yeah, so as I said, I spoke with quite a few members of the team, and so far we've got two interviews up from my time there. So the first one, I spoke with King's president, Sjodor Sommerstad, I think. Sorry if I'm pronouncing your name wrong there. But yeah, so that was a really interesting conversation. He was really quite thorough in talking about what his role actually entails on like a day-to-day basis. Although he said that there's not really an average day being the president of King. But it sounded like a lot of, quite a few meetings with different teams and a general culture of like encouraging learning and like transparency between the different games that they're working on, I guess, so that everyone can kind of work together towards a winning formula. Although obviously each game is going to have its own thing that works and doesn't. Yeah, so it was interesting. I'd say throughout all the interviews, everyone really seemed to value this like learning culture where they're constantly trying to improve things. They're not just like, you know, Candy Crush is massive, so we don't really need to do anything. It's just going to make money. It's like, you know, no, there's always room to improve. Obviously, the games industry changes quickly as well, so it's keeping up with those changes. But the president said collaboration, curiosity, and transparency. Mm. Transparency are the most important factors.
I think, yeah, it was an interesting interview, and I haven't spoke with him myself before. It's interesting the position of the modern CEO in this kind of like entertainment tech company, and it is very much a making sure that everyone's happy and everyone speaks to each other is by far the most important role, rather than looking specifically at spreadsheets and signing forms and signing checks. You know, it's this kind of this rousing your troops to work collaboratively is the 9-to-5, you know, day in, day out. It's an interesting role that that we see a lot in games, and typified best by companies such as King and Supercell, inevitably, is this all I'm here for is to let you be your best. It's quite a refreshing and encouraging way of addressing management, I think, in 2024. So yeah, it was good to see. It was quite an inspiring interview, and I can see why what they're doing is working.
Yeah, and I was pleasantly surprised as well, because I asked them quite a bit about like what kind of AI tech they're using, and as I mentioned earlier, there's like the bots to test Candy Crush levels and stuff, but so far, at least, all the AI stuff is really about taking over the sort of menial tasks from employees and leaving them with all the creative sections, which was nice to hear. Like the bots aren't taking over all the level design and artwork and stuff. They've still got creative people doing that, and then the bots just save time on replaying the level hundreds or thousands of times to to get an idea of its how it's working. So yeah, that was a positive that I sort of took away from it. But
I'm interested to see kind of where King's kind of going from here. They've obviously done a fantastic job with Candy Crush Saga, and to some extent that franchise, or to a big extent. But they've just not really been able to break out of it. Obviously, they do have, like, you know, Farm Hero Saga, it's a $1 billion game. And then they had Candy Crush Soda Saga. I was really interested to hear in one of your interviews that was actually meant to replace Candy Crush Saga.
Yeah.
But it didn't. But then I think it still made, like, billions of dollars alongside, I guess, the mothership game, the flagship game. But they've been testing out a lot of different kind of Candy Crush Blast, a match 3D game, and they kind of failed with Crash Bandicoot. So yeah, just it treats this massive organization that is King, you know. Where do they go from here, or is it just they just keep maintaining one of the world's, maybe the world's most successful mobile game?
So I also spoke with Trevor Burrows from the Farm Hero Saga team, and so the most interesting thing was hearing about King's sort of willingness to backtrack or reverse decisions based on player feedback, and really take, you know, the players' responses to whatever they do on board, and sort of iterate on what works, remove what doesn't. So like, he talked about they updated the art style at one point and totally revamped it. And apparently the team were really excited about this new art style, to give it a fresh look. And the fans hated it. And to the point where it was actually causing like a visible drop in their player base just because of this one change to the art style. So yeah, they quickly reversed back and then recovered things. But yeah, so I was surprised that the look of the game had that much power. And you know, I think that was I suppose not every company would perhaps go back on their decision there. I can imagine some doubling down and being like, you know, we've invested in this new art style, that's what we're going with now. But yeah, King were willing to go back, even though personally they really liked what they'd changed it to. So yeah, I thought that was an interesting one.
Yeah, just fascinating to see the inner workings.
Yeah.
And like the impact that decisions make on revenue and downloads. Like any decision could have potentially big consequences.
Other than that, in sort of news this week, Honkai Star Rail is still doing very well for itself, and a lot better than Genshin Impact at the moment. So based on App Magic data, it earned more than double the revenue that Genshin Impact did in March. So it generated about 118 million just on mobile, just in March, and Genshin Impact made about 58 million. In the same period. So there seems to be a lot of back and forth between Genshin and Honkai Star Rail. Like, 1 month one will do really well and then the next it'll kind of flip. But outside of possibly the launch month, I think this is the strongest lead Star Rail's had over Genshin. So whether that's a sign of things to come, I guess we'll know soon at the end of April whether that's sort of becoming a trend. But yeah, it's an interesting one. And for Genshin, it was their worst month on record based on App Magic numbers. So
that's it, Genshin Impact's over.
Yeah, you heard it here first. That can be your hill, Craig. You can just
that can be...
say Genshin.
Just... But it's interesting that there's definitely cannibalization there between the two games. But it maybe looks like, you know, overall, not counting the investments put into the games, that the Hoyoverse I guess as they're called now, are making more money than they were when it was just Genshin Impact. But how long-term sustainable that is for both games, we'll see.
I think it's interesting to see. I mean, I don't think they worry too much about players switching from one to the other as long as they've got them somewhere. So yeah, it is what used to be, you know, you're cannibalizing your own success. And you should never do that. It's interesting how this balance of power between the two games alternates. And yeah, I do think, you know,
I guess if players are going to churn out anyway, like you say, they might as well churn out to your other game.
Yeah.
Then to a rival, and you'd never get anything from that.
Yeah, and then back again when they go, I've had enough of this one. What was the old one like again? So yeah, all you ever do is in your mind you're playing a new game, but it's like no. All you've done is alternate, vacillate between these two that are owned and run by the same person. So yeah, it's an interesting strategy that's it's working. Yeah, Genshin isn't going anywhere for a long time.
It seems like they were staggering. I don't know if they always do this, but at least in March they staggered their like big updates for the month. So like Genshin had an update early in March that brought new characters and stuff for people to spend on, and then their earnings surged for like a week after that, and then dropped again. And then towards the end of the month, Honkai Star Rail had a big update and brought new stuff out, and then that one got the surge, so I guess they're both kind of peaking at different parts of the month, but Honkai's peak was a lot bigger than Genshin's this time.
That's really interesting. I wonder if that is actually a strategy that they split the two games like that, or it just happened to be the case. Definitely something to watch going forward. Right, so that brings us to the end of the news section, and now we're going to rumble on to the week in views, and I'll start. Embracer is dead. Long live Embracer, without the Embracer name. I'm still kind of a bit shocked that this happened. So Embracer has announced plans to split into three separate public companies. Under the plans, one of those companies will be Asmodee Group, which Embracer bought for $3 billion. Let's not forget. They'll handle the tabletop publishing distribution business. So I guess basically what they were doing before. It will house 23 fully owned studios with access to over 300 IPs. This is according to the Embracer deck from Lars. Their IPs include Ticket to Ride, Exploding Kittens, and Catan. I'll go into more of that in a minute. But and then one of the other companies is Coffee Stain and Friends. So that will be an indie and AA premium games, I guess, developer and publisher for PC and console. But they also then have the mobile business attached to that. So that will include companies such as Decca Games, Easy Brain, Amplifier Invest, and THQ Nordic. And then finally, the other company, Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends. There is a tiniest little mark in these presentation slides. I didn't notice straight away. These aren't going to be the company names necessarily when this all actually gets formulated properly. Yeah,
which is good. Which is good because I'm fairly used to terrible company names, but they are among...
And Friends.
Yeah, the and Friends brand. Middle Earth Enterprises, okay, and Friends.
I get why they did it, but also when you've laid off 1,400 employees, I don't think adding and Friends.
Yeah, cheer up.
Recovers your reputation. So that part of the business, Middle Earth Enterprises Friends, will operate as AAA developer and publisher in the PC and console space, retaining previously acquired IP rights to the likes of Lord of the Rings and Tomb Raider. Companies housed within the new organization include Crystal Dynamics, Eidos Montreal, PlayOn, Dark Horse, and Freemode. So again, you've got a bit of a breadth of companies there. On the slide, I'm pretty sure it said 4A Games, which is the maker of the Metro series, but they're about to be sold to Saber Interactive, I think. There was the option for Saber to buy them, and I think that is just happening. So I don't know why they included it. Anyway, so I spoke with a few analysts, so shout out to Nicholas Lovell, Nick Gibson, and Juice Van Joranen about this. Overall opinion appears that the split is a good thing for varying parts of Embracer, but there are major caveats here, right? Asmodee is basically taking on between $900 million to $1 billion in debt that Embracer had. So it had a $1.5 billion black hole. Embracer's picking up that, and they're also it gets quite confusing now. Embracer also took a loan of about $1 billion. Sorry, 900 to $1 billion, and all of that is kind of loaned against Asmodee assets as the collateral. So when it spins off into its own business, it takes that debt with it, and also this financing agreement with a bunch of banks, because I guess the banks agreed that this is a good business, it could probably handle the debt. Good luck to them. It's not the way you want to start your new public company, but if any part of the business could handle it, it's this one that makes the most sense. It focuses on tabletop, very dominant in that space. Like that, I guess that kind of makes sense. As for Coffee Stain and Friends, so Nicholas said it could have some trouble, like a Devolver Digital, Tiny Build, Team 17, and to an extent Frontier have had on the stock market. So when you release a hit, it's great. But at that level, if you stop releasing hits for a little while, I think sorry to talk about share prices topic, I'm not that, okay with, but just from what Nicholas was saying, it's just like that then kind of knocks confidence. So that's why those companies then struggle, because I guess this is not what he said, but I guess maybe those are the kind of businesses arguably that shouldn't be public. But they'll probably argue much better than me that they should. And that's not a knock on the individual parts of that business, that lots of great developers. It's just whether it works as a company. And also, the thing that definitely doesn't make sense is, why would you attach a mobile free-to-play business to your indie and AA PC or console games company? That makes no sense. Like, it's almost like you have to split the company into four bits.
Yeah, more bits.
And have the mobile side. I can't see. Surely that the mobile arm will be sold. It doesn't fit in anyway. Maybe it's good as like if it generates a lot of revenue, but. And then Middle-earth Enterprises and Friends. Personally, I'm quite concerned. Yeah, it's got like the Middle-earth IP, but I don't think that includes the films that we're all actually familiar with. I could be wrong. But then that's going to be pretty heavily reliant on, again, big hits. And I guess, how do they afford it? If a big AAA game could cost you like at least $100 million development and marketing, where does that I can't see that they're going to get a lot of funding after the history of Embracer. So how are they going to fund all of these big AAA games to be really good quality? The development teams are pretty incredible that they've got, that remain. They've also sold some of their best ones, Gearbox, probably 4A Games. I guess we'll see how they do. Anyway, Embracer's dead. Long live.
It is an incredible story, but it's the old moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic vibe, isn't it? It's everything. This is the structure of the company. Oh, you don't like that? Okay, we can structure it in a different way. So you have to give them the benefit of the doubt and see what's going to happen. But for me, Embracer was all about the acquisition strategy and the name Embracer, and we have all of this stuff and it's all under one roof. So for them to say, we've had a brilliant idea, we're going to fragment everything off again, immediately I've got to throw my hands up and just say, I don't get it. As you've spelt out there are opportunities there. Asmodee having you're the one that's going to get all the debt, so you have that. You know, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, you're the good one.
You're the good one. Here's the debt. It kind of makes sense on paper because it, you know, as Lars, you know, has said himself, it allows the various parts of the company out from under the burden of the other parts. But you know, it's just with my skeptical hat on, you've got to think that in a year's time, we've had this brilliant idea. We're going to glue everything together again. It's like, really? But yeah, I do agree, Craig. I think portioning this stuff up makes a really strong case for some more, and possibly quite a lot of it getting sold on in chunks to help the larger group. But yeah, you know, the fact
that... I think it sums up that Embracer was just anyone could see the whole time for years. What are you buying? Like, what's the what is the core strategy that brings it all together? There wasn't one.
Yeah.
So it was a house of cards waiting to fall on a couple of failures, and it's games. You're going to launch games that fail. Just how it is. It could be the best game. It will fail.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Titanfall 2 is like maybe like one of the best shooters ever made. They release it at the wrong time, and it kind of died, really. Obviously, now you've got Apex Legends, and Respawn's incredible. That game is incredible. But even that could fail. So, I don't know. Anyway, Lars is going to remain in control of, I think, all three companies to some degree.
So. Which kind of shows that nothing's changed, other than we've hidden a peanut underneath three cups, and we're swapping them around a bit. Anyway, but they best of luck to them. Best of luck. They have some absolutely cracking IP, and there's no reason why they can't make a go of it. So yeah, I hope it works out.
Right, I've spent far too long talking, so we're going to move on to Daniel's week in views.
I'll keep it quick. Just a little nod. A little nod to my... needless to say, I've managed to work Apple in here somehow. Apple Pro headset woes. Of course the Apple Pro Vision Pro wasn't going to sell. So nobody expected it to be a massive hit out the door. So, you know, even the most idiotic Apple fanboy knew that. $3,500. A use case that evades, you know, everyone. It's a very nice piece of kit, but it's an expensive toy for idiots with too much money and time. You know, so the fact that it's a failure, failure in inverted commas, or rather isn't doing very well, it doesn't surprise me at all. So, yeah, don't point the finger at me and laugh at me for backing the failure. I own two HomePods, for heaven's sake. I love a failure. So seeing Apple Vision Pro bumble along at this point isn't a surprise. What I do find a little bit...
Does it make you want it more?
Well, this thing, I want one for a weekend. And the thing, and something I'm seriously considering, and a lot of people did when it went on sale in America, is, of course, Apple have this fantastic 30 days return policy, no questions asked, is buying it. I guarantee that if I was to buy it for whatever many thousands of pounds that it's going to be, I would have great fun with it in 30 days. And within 30 days, perhaps within 7 days, I would be bored, sick of it, and be wondering what I'd bought it for. So I could return it. So I am seriously considering buying one just to have a play on it and get it out of my system, and then to take up Apple's fantastic returns policy and take it back. But yeah, the idea of buying it and keeping it, I know that that's not going to happen. So yeah, the thing that I do find surprising is this notion of, because they haven't sold enough at the big daft price, the inevitable second generation, which was due 2025, is now in under threat as to whether they're going to bother. The micro LED screen stuff and the OLED stuff and the tech that they put into it was supposed to get cheaper, and if not enough people have bought the first gen, they can't price the second gen where they were going to, and that's potentially a problem, because I'd hate to see this tech disappear and evaporate, like you know, in an article I wrote, like they tried to make a go of the Newton, which is their handheld computing device, you know, way before the iPhone and iPad. And you know, I remember it being introduced, and I remember friends of mine, you know, stumped up the money and bought them. Yeah, and it was a great little toy. So I really see it like that. But yeah, the Newton ultimately failed, and that tech went away, and you know, came back years later in the iPhone. So I don't want to see any of this amazing technology just fail and disappear. But you know, especially when the road ahead for Apple Vision, make it cheaper, take the spooky fake eyes screen off the front, which allows you to make it cheaper. It was, you know, the roadmap was there. The use cases will come. Everyone will wise up a bit. The battery will last longer. It'll be lighter and more comfortable. It's just going to happen. You know, remember Apple launches in the past. You know, every single Apple launch has its naysayers from day one, but it manages to bumble through to the second gen, and then they all take off. So it'd be a real shame if this one, I didn't get it. Lukewarm launches are kind of Apple's thing, and by the second and third gen, everyone's forgotten that you know, they spent the 6 months before launch taking the piss out of it. I hope that it bumbles through. The main worry for me is the lack of apps, and I find that a real surprise. The figures we were quoting was that they've looked into it, and if you classify apps for the Apple Vision Pro as strictly those apps that use eye tracking and all the features of the Apple Vision Pro to be an app that can only exist on the Apple Vision Pro, rather than a very simple and quick iOS port from an iPad or an iPhone app. If you count just those Apple Vision Pro apps, in the last week of March, there was one new addition. Launch week, there was 150, which isn't a lot. And then the graph has tapered down to one new Apple Vision Pro app on their app store in the final week of March. So it looks like devs aren't getting on board, and if devs don't get on board, then those fabulous use cases never come. So yeah, I'm watching with interest to see what happened, and this is happening right now as they stare global launch in new territories in the face. What are they going to price it at? You know, what are they going to do? They run the risk of, I mean, they could. They've got the money. They could price it very keenly and force it into being a success by having an absolutely crazy reduced price. But they won't want to do that. But they run the risk of it dying if they don't. So, yeah, I'm in no hurry to buy one other than one that I can return within 30 days for free. So I can't guess that kind of says it all. If I don't want one, then nobody does. So, yeah, sad what watching the Apple Vision Pro at this point. Can't wait to see what's going to happen and what Apple are going to do about it.
Maybe emulated Nintendo games in Apple VR.
I've heard they're very popular on Apple products around about now. Yeah. So yeah, that's the road ahead.
The amount of money that's been invested to just will these things into existence. So Meta with, well, Oculus, but the Meta headset, I guess. And now Apple with the Vision Pro, they're just so desperate to be there for the next big platform, because no one wants to miss the next big thing, that they just feel obliged. And I guess they have the money to invest in it. And if they missed out and didn't do it, I guess everyone will be asking, where were you? But, I mean, what a long road to get to a mass market device. I'm almost like, why keep releasing these things? Why not just, like, they didn't believe the Vision Pro was the one that would crack the market. So why bother in terms of releasing it? Like, why not just keep researching, developing internally, unless it's just pressure?
I think the brave thing that they did was that I think Meta and and Quest, they looked at it and they said, well, obviously, people aren't just going to buy this. We need to build out this whole notion of a metaverse and Horizon Worlds and being able to work in this workplace. And they built this whole universe where this device made sense. But the fact is, nobody wanted to go into that universe. Nobody wanted to go play there, or go. Certainly, nobody wanted to go work there. So it kind of threw their whole kind of headset strategy into question. I admire what Apple did, which is basically they haven't mentioned metaverse at all. They haven't created a world that this allows you to step into. It's little more than a brilliant and novel way to watch movies. It basically projects screens that look real before your very eyes. And that's the one thing that it does really well. The killer app for this thing is being able to sit on a plane and for it to look like you've got a 100-inch TV hovering in front of you. And that's really, really clever. If this filters down to some sort of, I put on these glasses and I can see my Mac laptop, multiple screens, or I can look at my photos like I'm really there, and it becomes little more than a 3D Viewmasters from the 70s. It becomes little more than a viewing thing that allows me to look at things and in a whole new light. You know, maybe that's the end product. But I want it to get there, and I want it to get there as soon as possible. So it failing at this first hurdle, I think is a shame. But I can't predict what's going to happen with it. I mean, what I really hope is that they have and what will give us fuel to write about is they give it a stunningly a really keen price tag. They learnt the lesson from the US, and they sell it at some sort of loss. They are never going to do that.
Yeah, exactly. This is Apple. They sell premium products.
I know.
Never going to be a cheap product. It's just never going to
happen.
It's
so painful. So it's going to come out. It's going to limp. And yeah, I just hope that the tech gets used in something that does make sense, rather than it gets forever put in the coffin and buried as bad idea. I think there's something in there waiting to get out. But yeah, the way it's going, it's going to be a long time before we see it.
So on that note, we've got one more week of views left, which is Aaron. You've got snoring with Snorlax.
Yeah, it's a nice, relaxing one to end off today. As it sort of sounds like, really, Pokemon are working together with the Japan's Grand Hyatt Tokyo Hotel to bring a sort of premium sleep experience, not just in game. This is
a premium sleep experience. I love
that. Well, you know, you laugh now, but you know, it had better be a premium experience, because a night in the like top level suite, you know, if you want a Snorlax to sleep with, not in that way.
That's extra.
That's upper floor. Yeah.
Plushes, t-shirt, rucksack. You can get all these like themed Pokemon stuff included, and a bed because it's a hotel. So you would hope you get to sleep there. But for one night in this hotel, you're looking at about $1,800.
It's less than a Vision Pro.
Yeah. So that's a good point. I suppose that's not too bad. You've got to factor in the flight over to Japan, though. It's an interesting one. I mean, I'm sure people will pay for it, but that's quite a lot of money for some of us.
I wonder about the benefit of the experience, given that you are in fact unconscious during it. I guess it's just that initial enter the room, know that you spend £1,800 to sleep under a Snorlax duvet cover, and then drift off knowing that money well spent.
Yeah, I mean they have herbal tea as well. If you need any more temptation.
Oh, there you go. It's totally worth it.
Very good. One for the fans. Yeah, I think I'm sure there'll be queuing around the block.
Yeah, because there's all like Pokemon themed food and stuff as well in like the restaurant. So they've got like a Snorlax burger, which my first thought when I read that was that it's like a burger that's supposed to be made of Snorlax.
I was thinking that.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Now you finally
which
get.
Which would go a little bit against.
You get
the
to
breath.
Taste a genuine Pokemon. There you go.
Yeah, and then like Pikachu pancakes. Like oh, I don't know what's in those. So.
It's barbaric, I tell you.
Whether you have sweet dreams or a nightmare after eating Pikachu pancakes, I don't know. But just a bit of a light one to end off in. Basically, they're doing it because it's coming up on the 1 year anniversary of the game already, and it's just a very interesting promotional tactic, I guess, ultimately. And a moneymaker, I suppose.
Yep.
Sounds like the start of a horror movie. The way you put it.
Yep.
One night away at this hotel. Yeah. It was going to be great.
And then it all went wrong.
A small group of people went to the room.
best of luck. Yeah, it's yeah. I'm not going there for my holidays. But Lynn's at Minehead. Suits me just fine. I'll be fine.
So that brings us to the end of the PocketGamer.biz podcast. Thanks very much to everyone for listening. Thanks to Daniel and Aaron for joining.
Always a pleasure.
And sleep well.